Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, this is Billie Jean King.
This is Marion Bartoli.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carillo.
This is Pam Shriver.
This is Yannick Noah.
Hi, I'm Holly.
And I'm Ella.
And I'm their grandma, Tamara Glennie.
We love tennis.
And we also love listening to...
The Tennis Podcast.
Well, thank you very much, Tamara and granddaughters Polly and Ella, who have introduced one of our tennis podcasts before. Catherine, Matt and myself were just remembering that very fondly. And to hear their lovely voices on our show again once more is a treat, Catherine. And it helps your 11:30 recording time after a long old week.
Yes, very cheering. So thank you very much for that. Lovely. It has been a long old week. It's been really good. I've loved being out here in Turin, but the hours are quite punishing. It's the little gaps between sessions that can confirm aren't long enough for a nap, but you know, too long just to sort of fiddle around a bit on your phone for a while. Annoying periods of time where all I can think is could be asleep now. Could be asleep now. And I think lack of vitamin D as well. It's actually been gorgeous weather in Turin most of the week, and it's a very scenic place. Step out the front of the hotel. I have my 5 minutes in the outdoors while I'm waiting for the bus in the morning, and you can see the mountains off in the not too distant horizon. And it's beautiful. And then I go inside and I don't see daylight again for another sort of 14 hours. So get the violins out for me. Nothing a bit of vitamin D and sleep won't fix.
Well, good news is she's heading back to London to get the most glorious weather imaginable in November.
Vitamin D tablets, David.
Yes. Oh, yes, those two, which she's got me onto. They work a treat. So that's Turin. What about Malaga, Matt? What's it like there?
Well, I don't want to rub it in, but I'm hoping for some vitamin D. I arrived in the dark, so I haven't had a great view of it yet. But apparently I have an ocean view room from this hotel.
Oh, yeah, right.
Can't see the ocean at the moment, but updates throughout the week.
Yes, because we'll be with you every single day throughout the Davis Cup finals, which start in a couple of days' time. Matt, is it media day tomorrow when you get all the press conferences and you go and rub shoulders with the teams and all that?
It is, yes. Jack Sock was on my flight today, so I know that he's here.
What's he doing flying from London?
I wondered the same.
Maybe you have to connect, I guess, where does he live? Texas? That was a stab in the dark, guys, if it wasn't clear.
Could be that one.
Maybe you can't fly direct. I presume you can't fly direct, yeah. Mm.
He didn't look like he'd just come off a really long flight. He was far fresher than I would have been. But anyway, he's here. And yes, because it's a knockout competition at the Davis Cup this year, some teams are starting Tuesday, but the US don't start till Thursday, so he's got a bit more time, I suppose, to get going.
Do you remember that year that Jack Sock qualified for the ATP finals?
I do.
The two memories I have of that, one is of him beating Kyle Edmund from some insane position when he was losing horrifically and somehow managed to win. And I kind of felt like Kyle Edmund never got over that. And then of him sort of allowing Roger Federer to smack a ball into his backside at the net during the tournament itself.
And Federer missed.
Oh.
I think he hit it into the net.
Right.
Wasn't that a slightly weird year at the ATP final? Was that the year with the Kane Shikori Roger Federer match?
No. That was the following year.
Okay.
Was that the worst match we've ever seen?
My brother maintains it is the worst tennis match he has ever seen, yeah. I'm sure deep down he was grateful for the free tickets, but... yeah, headline, worst tennis I've ever seen, not worth a trip to East London.
But there was also that same tournament, Kevin Anderson beat Kane Ishikori 6-love, 6-1.
Yes.
Really? I can't remember any of this.
And it was truly
this
awful.
This was 2017?
18. 18. 17 was the Jack Sock year.
Yes, okay.
And 18 was the Kane Ishikori playing the worst tennis matches anyone's ever seen year.
Mm. Right. See, if you'd have put
Jack
this in 1997, I'd remember it.
30 years old.
Is he? Mm. Goodness. Do you remember that year at the O2 when every single match was straight sets all the way through the tournament?
Yes.
Because they'd have a half competitive first set and then somebody would just completely run out of steam and just get steamrolled.
Mm.
Yes. I seem to remember there was a year where that kept happening and then David Ferrer came in as an alternate and finally there was a three-set match.
That didn't mean anything.
Basically. Yeah, that didn't mean anything. There were some ropey years at the O2.
They've had four... We will come on to talk about Novak Djokovic winning the title, folks. They've had, I think, four final set tiebreaks in the singles this year, which I think is a record. In fact, I know is a record, which on the face of it looks really good, doesn't it, for the tournament in terms of, you know, getting the court speed right. I know you had a chat about this on the show a couple of nights ago on the night that I submitted my outside the toilets voice note. You know, on paper, the scores, it has looked like good tennis in terms of court speed and competitiveness and, you know, not too grueling at the end of a season, players not dropping like flies. I don't have the stat to hand, but this feels like the first year in quite a long time that an alternate hasn't had to be called upon.
Mm. Yeah, Holger Rune has just been sat there, hasn't he, with his
feet?
Oh,
and I, you know, I did a... I did an interview for Danish TV the other day about mostly about Holger Rune, and the interviewer told me that he had been speaking to him, and he has been like a caged animal all week. Can't sit still, can't sleep, just fidgeting the whole time, just absolutely desperate to get out there. And it's a weird situation to be in. I know some alternates come into tournaments feeling like, well, this is an excellent paid holiday. And some come in like Holger Rune, you know, praying to the injury gods that someone gets taken out. And his the luck didn't fall his way this year.
I remember in about 1998, I remember being in a player lounge with Richard Krajicek, who was the alternate, and it was finals day, and I went up to him and said, "Oh, hey, how you doing? What are you doing in here?" And he was sat there with his suitcase, and he said, "All I need is for this next match to play one point, and then I'm off to the airport."
Must be very weird. You're sort of the ghost at the feast, aren't you? And I don't know, there's very different types of alternate. You know, Holger Rune, 19-year-old that a few months ago you would have laughed at the prospect of him being an alternate at the ATP finals. And then there's your There's your David Ferrer's, your perennial alternate. You know, Holger Rune can probably just about stomach it because there is absolutely no doubt in his mind that he will be there by right for the next 10 to 15 years. You've got your David Ferrer's, your sort of just...
Didn't Grigor Dimitrov turn it down?
Resigned to being perennially... Well, I sort of respect that. I get it. If the Maldives is waiting, David... But...
No, I thought it was maybe the year.
Some players do. I don't think it's that unusual to turn it down.
Sort of wanted to get his next season ready or something like that. I can't understand it.
Yeah. It wouldn't get my juices flowing. I'm available. Just wouldn't turn it down. But you know, if you've already got enough money in the bank and you've been there and done it, like Grigor Dimitrov, I could understand.
Just before I ask my first question about Novak Djokovic and Casper Ruud, you saw Holger Rune close up for the first time, didn't you, at this this tournament on the eve of it, and you were really taken by what you saw. I mean, I know he's just had this incredible week. We all know he can play, but I mean, I remember you were pretty awestruck by what he was doing.
He was the first player I saw when I walked into the Palo Alto Stadium for the first time. There he was. On the centre court, hitting with Daniil Medvedev, who wasn't enjoying himself. And, that maybe, you know, obviously hindsight is a wonderful thing, prophetic of the week to come. He was getting pretty irritated with Holger Rune, who was fist pumping in a practice at a tournament that he wasn't even technically playing at. Which tells you everything you need to know about Holger Rune, sort of. Brilliant, but also, I can imagine, for any other player, deeply irritating. But for me, I loved it. The intensity was mind-blowing, and the ball makes a certain kind of sound coming off his racket. It is a sweet, sweet hit that he has. He's physically bigger and stronger looking in real life than he is on TV. He's quite Grigor Dimitrov-y. Actually, in terms of his physique, very sinewy and maximized physically. He's also got those quad muscles that bulge out every time that he takes a step, which is a bit terrifying when he's sort of walking directly towards you. I stand by everything I said. About him at the end of Paris, which I said in full knowledge that it could all be recency bias, still could be, but I am in looking forward to watching him play a competitive match live in Australia for the first time. That is high up on my to watch list for the early days.
I also think he was the sort of alternate here that, had he got in, might have done some real damage if he got in early enough, you know, because I think the most likely scenario was that he probably would have come in for Rafael Nadal. Nadal was probably the most uncertain about his fitness of everyone who was here. And, you know, if he'd come in after Nadal had played one match, maybe he'd have had a chance to play a couple, one of them against Casper Ruud. I think he would have actually been a really good addition to this tournament. Obviously, it was great to see Nadal play three matches. I didn't want Nadal to pull out. But someone hungry and in form, that's really what you want at the season-ending finals, as opposed to maybe a bit weary at the end of the season, whereas he was right in his prime and kind of ready to go. I'm sure he'll be back. And I do remember him being on site at the 2019 finals. I think he was the junior who was like everyone's hitting partner, and he was going around taking photos with everyone, so he'd already had a bit of that experience of just being at this event and being in amongst it. And I can imagine he was just absolutely desperate to get out there and play, considering his form.
And I think one of the hitting partners at the event this week, who I think in fact warmed up both finalists today, is the Spanish youngster that won the US Open Juniors this year. He's a Rafael Nadal Academy kid, isn't he?
Martin Landaluce.
Yes,
I think
there
might
we
be
go.
Called.
Very deliberately left the pronunciation to you there.
No surprise that Matt's got the intel and the insight on this guy, because I can already feel his next Carlos Alcaraz.
Have I got that right, Matt? He's a Nadal Academy prodigy.
You're going to show me up now, because I really don't have that much intel.
Because if he's not, this might be a different person, because this kid had a Rafael Nadal Academy shirt on.
Okay.
Well, I'm pretty sure Martin Landaluce won the US Open Juniors.
Okay. Why don't we start talking about Novak Djokovic while I Google the potentially fake news that I just dropped.
Yeah, can I also say, I think we might come in for some hate if we refer to David Ferrer as a perennial alternate. Didn't he? I'm sure he must have qualified loads.
Yes,
for this
he did.
Event.
He qualified as well. He qualified as well. Yes.
I'm just getting ahead of them.
Oh, I don't think it was Martin. You know, Martin's blonde. This guy wasn't blonde.
Well, oh, no. I'm excited
he's
about
quite
Martin
good, though.
Anyway.
Very good.
Even you can change your hair colour.
Okay. Right, folks. It's time to talk about Novak Djokovic winning the title, the ATP Finals, for a joint record-equaling sixth time alongside Roger Federer. I didn't realise it had been 7 years since he'd won the event. I mean, that's extraordinary, isn't it, to think how much of those 7 years he has kind of dominated the circuit. And it just brings me back to what Matt said the other day about this year it feels like it matters more to him, this tournament, than it has in the past, because he hasn't played events this year. What's he played, 10 or 11 events all year, and he's fresh, and he hasn't played two of the Grand Slams because of his decision not to get vaccinated. He was bang up for this tournament, this whole stretch, I think, really, this autumn stretch. The scoreline was 7-5, 6-3, Matt. That about what you thought you'd get and the way it went? What did you think of what you saw?
I believe I said yesterday that in my big hype for this match, Casper Ruud might get a set. So the fact that he didn't isn't totally surprising. I guess if I had to say, I probably would have said Djokovic in straight sets, one close one, one slightly less close one. Yeah, it felt about right, to be honest. I thought Djokovic played really well in the second set. Really well. Far better than he'd played against Taylor Fritz. Probably better than he'd played against Medvedev. He was back to the form of the start of the tournament. And he just found a level that Casper Ruud doesn't have. And that's no slight on Casper Ruud, because I'm not sure anyone in the tournament would have had the level to live with Novak Djokovic in that second set. What really struck me, and I said this on our WhatsApp chat, was how comfortable Djokovic seemed just in the rallies against Ruud, because as much as Ruud has developed, and he has got a lot better, he's improved his serve, he's improved his backhand, he's improved his chip return, all great developments. But what he hasn't really got is the ability to turn defense into attack, especially off the backhand. All he can do when he's pushed out wide is either loop it up and it's a bit short and easily attackable, or slice. Whereas Djokovic, when he's in that position, as we know, has sort of invented that shot that he slides into it and can just hit an attacking shot from a defensive position. And it just seemed like that was happening time and time again. Ruud was maybe pushing Djokovic back, but it was fine because Djokovic can defend it. And as soon as Djokovic got on the front foot, Ruud wasn't able to respond with the sort of attacking defence of his own. So it just seemed like a really pretty good matchup for Djokovic generally. And as soon as he was comfortable, then I think he sort of opened his shoulders and started swinging and played an absolutely flawless second set. And he was a worthy winner.
I mean, he looked uncomfortable in the first set. Physically, to me, Djokovic, he didn't look like he was enjoying himself very much, like he was feeling that great. He didn't say anything that I heard to that effect after the match, because, I mean, frankly, by the time the second set came around and he eked out that first one, which, bear in mind, it was 5-6 Ruud 30 all, and Rude thought he hit a service winner ace, which was overruled by Hawkeye. That was a very timely challenge from Djokovic. It was a fraction of a centimetre out, and so he didn't win that point and go game point up to force a tiebreak after all, Rude, and then Djokovic just took over from there. But I think Djokovic just started to feel comfortable again. I think he was having a painkiller of some kind. He was rubbing his temples in the first set. You know, he's not a player, and he never has been, and I think he never will be a player who hides how he's feeling. If he's not feeling very well, he lets you know about it. And it does lead to a lot of people saying, why is he doing all that? And then he goes and wins easily and all this, and people get wound up about that. I'm not that bothered about that, personally. I don't mind people showing that they're not feeling great. And I think, you know, it's not abnormal to then feel better a little bit later on and then suddenly go and destroy someone. But the difference between sets one and two was stark. I mean, his form, suddenly he was off and running. But I had a problem with, and this may, you may think I'm a bit harsh. I'm curious to hear what you think, Catherine, particularly on this one. I have a problem with the way Rude approached this match and approaches these matches against him and Nadal. We covered that briefly last night. But he applauded Djokovic about three times in the first five games. One of them, when Djokovic missed. Djokovic went for an audacious drop volley on the backhand side that only missed by a centimetre. Rude was already running towards the net to applaud it because he thought it was in. And I'm thinking, go and beat the guy. Stop trying to be so nice about him. Stop trying, you know, and I know that Djokovic applauds opponents too, but he's the guy with the power. He's the guy with the record. He's the guy who is lulling you into his trap because, yes, he is polite and he is a sportsmanlike in those situations, but he's also a killer. He's going to try and destroy you on the court because that's what he does. That's what the best players do. Nadal is a great sportsman, but he's still trying to destroy you. Go out there and land one on him. Gain his respect. Yeah, and I don't think Rude was doing that. What do you think?
I know we want Catherine's analysis on this. I was just going to say, I actually think applauding Djokovic's missed shots is sort of the sort of the troll energy that he might need to bring in some of these matches. I know he wasn't doing that as a troll. I know it was an accident, but actually thinking about it, I'm starting to think maybe next time he needs to do just a little bit more of that, but mean it.
I wasn't expecting you to go on that rant, David, but I loved every second of it. Yeah, I mean, those moments encapsulated why I struggle a bit with Casper Ruud, despite him being great. I know I've really enjoyed interviewing him this week. He's great. I have so much respect for what he's done with his game. I really do. And I know there are different ways to be imposing on a court and be interesting and be fun, but that is something that I just have no time for. None at all. And there is nothing more deflating than knowing that somebody doesn't really believe in a match like that.
It used to happen with Federer all the time, didn't it?
Yeah, it did.
Berrettini, I mean, against Federer and loads of them.
I always say that, I mean, you know, we do have, I wouldn't quite say favourites, but we have players that we like watching more than others. You know, naturally, we're tennis fans, but I'm not a fan of anyone enough that I just want them to win. I always just want to see a competitive tennis match, always. I hope that will never leave me. Even when it's midnight and I've worked a 15-hour day, 5 days in a row, and there are people around me that I know love the sport that are just wanting it to end, I can't get rid of the part of me saying, no, let it go on. I want it to be brilliant and long and go to a deciding set tiebreak. And that's pretty much always the overriding thought for me. So in a match like that, where there is an overwhelming favourite, all you want, or all I want, is the person down the other end of the court. A bit like Taylor Fritz yesterday, actually. Taylor Fritz didn't have the game in the end, but he showed me enough in the first few games to make me think, okay, you've got this here mentally. You probably won't have it game-wise against the best player in the world right now. But you've got me. Casper Ruud didn't have me today, and I have nothing to add to what you said about the applause. I hate it. I absolutely hate it. And this isn't, we've already spent a lot of time talking about a guy that wasn't in the tournament this week, but it did make me just want to swap him out for Holger Rune. There is, you know, I am absolutely not here for the homophobic slurs of Holger Rune that he was punished for by the ATP, and I absolutely hope he has learned from. I don't want to glamorize and make light of all of his aggro, because it doesn't all fall into the same category. But cutting him a small amount of slack for that, given his age and the fact that he is pledged to learn from it, and he hasn't, to my knowledge, reoffended. The other stuff, the walking on court and being an utter irritant, no matter what the consequences, the fist pumping in practice, I was just craving that. I was. That's what I wanted. And it's the opposite end of the spectrum to applauding a shot that didn't even go in. My heart just sunk.
Yeah. Just to say, though, the problem is, see, I watch Casper Ruud because he's got that massive forehand, and he's got an improve. I really think your description, Matt, of his problems on the defense, turning that into attack, is a clear issue for him versus players that can do it. He's just not one of those at the moment who can. So I wanted him to be on the front foot from ball one. You've got to go after that forehand, Mach 10. You've got to be looking to just take this guy out a lot more.
I thought he was almost trying to slow ball in the early stages.
I think I can understand it to some degree. He very nearly went down a break immediately, didn't he? He was 15-40 down on his serve. And I think getting comfortable is one of the challenges in a match like that, because it can be over before you know it against a guy of Djokovic's quality. So I understand him not going for broke necessarily until he's comfortable. But once he'd held there, I just wanted him to take more cuts at the ball. Really, you know, take more chances than you would against normal players, because this guy isn't a normal player that you're up against. The problem you have against Djokovic is, I think probably my theory on that is oversimplifying what's involved, because Djokovic doesn't give you the balls to hit that you want to hit. And I think that it's like the comparison I would draw is all the fighters who would face Floyd Mayweather, and there'd be bigger punches on paper than him. They'd got more knockouts than him. But none of them could lay a clean shot on him, because he was never where they wanted him to be. They were always slightly off balance, just as they were throwing, and he'd given them a weird angle and moved his head and all the rest of it and tied them up. Djokovic does that all the time to people. He just puts people in places of the court they don't want to be in, so that they're not able to go after the ball. And I think that it's not a very sort of sexy way of showing how great Djokovic is, but it's so damn effective, and it kind of sets him apart.
It's that strangulation, isn't it? Handcuffing his opponents. You're right. It feels like damning by faint praise, but six titles, 21 slams. It's not, because it's so damn effective. But yeah, it doesn't always sound sexy.
And just forcing your opponent in. Okay, not the biggest match of Casper Ruud's life. He's played a couple of slam finals this year, but one of the biggest, to go outside of his comfort zone and say, well, you're going to have to do something that you're not comfortable with to stand any chance of beating me. I'm definitely backing the guy who's playing in his comfort zone and has all the experience, and that's Djokovic. And he
can do
that.
The only blokes who've ever done it.
As you said, he can do it to pretty much everyone.
Team and Wawrinka, about the only players I've ever seen do it.
Yeah, and Federer obviously could do it over best of three. He beat Djokovic quite a lot, just playing really attacking, brilliant, sparkling tennis. Nadal at Roland Garros can obviously do it, but it's not a big pool of players. And as you said, the real lights out tennis, it's kind of only been Thiem and Wawrinka.
You just want to see someone go on the court with the chutzpah to try, though, don't you? The problem is, if you try and fail, you fail.
Yeah,
you probably fail more spectacularly than
you've got to be prepared to do that.
7-5, 6-3 was it in the end? 6-4 yeah, you'd fail more spectacularly, but.
I do wonder whether Ruud, if he gets a couple more chances against them, might just reconcile that he's going to have to do that next time. Maybe he'll learn from these experiences. Because, I mean, look, he's a smart bloke. He's clearly, you know, he's a very studious player. I think he's got... I can sense the tension in his box when he's playing Nadal and Djokovic. Occasionally they'll do the close-ups and you'll hear the... And they're trying to get through to him, but they're trying to get him to believe and to stick in there and get comfortable, because otherwise it can be a really uncomfortable couple of hours. But I just feel as though, I mean, he's already done more this year than I think any of us thought he would. 2 Grand Slam finals, this final as well. I think he still can make some improvements, but the main improvement, I think you might have covered this in your Prime Video, Catherine, is the approach between the ears when you come up against these people. You've just got to go for it. And I think I'd like to think he'll learn from it in that way. Be very interesting. But yeah, 6 titles, incredible level that Djokovic is finding now at the age of 35. No sign of any drop in his standards whatsoever. And it just sets it up so, so perfectly now for next year.
Yeah, it does. Just fast forward through the Maldives and give me Alcaraz Djokovic now, please. Really not interested in anything else. But just put me on a flight to Australia and give me Alcaraz Djokovic.
What about if I give you Kyrgios Djokovic 4th round?
No, no, no. Runa, I mean, I'm not Djokovic interested in anything quarters. Else that's going to happen in the intervening period.
Okay. Just,
Christmas can bog off. It's just a waiting game now.
Okay.
But we are excited for the Davis Cup finals.
Absolutely right.
I am. Honestly, I am. I am. Because otherwise, if we didn't have that, I would be, and especially with being able to do daily pods, I would have I'd have a black hole feeling tomorrow, but I don't. I'll have I wish I was in Malaga feeling.
Yeah, we're going to have Matt telling us all about it on tomorrow night's daily podcast when we can't wait.
It's all about the blooming vitamin D. So pleased for you.
By the way, have either of you ever seen a tennis match that Novak Djokovic has lost when his kids are there? He seems to just be even more dangerous when they're around.
Well, I think his daughter Tara being there for matches is a very new thing. I think she's just hit the age where she can sit through a tennis match, but only if he wins quickly.
So I wonder if that's an
incentive. Yeah, and the players' box is so close to the court.
Oh, is it?
In Turin, yeah, they're right there and they do this thing. I mean, the staging of this event really is good, you know, that it's exactly the same as it was when it was in London, you know, the light show and everything, the way they illuminate the court, the blue is so electric and they have the crowd in darkness, the crowd except for the two players' boxes, which have spotlights on them. So both the players and the crowds and the cameras are always able to keep their eyes on them. Yeah, it's a really nice little touch.
I was going to say, just, you know, I'm sure we may have more to discuss on Djokovic, but since you've brought up the Turin to London comparison, how have you found being in Turin compared to London? Because I remember last year watching Turin on the TV. I was a little bit disappointed that they hadn't freshened it up a bit more. I didn't actually feel like that this year. I do feel like the event does have a real identity now, which they've continued. But London, I loved the many years it was there. But kind of as we started this podcast with, there were some years which, you know, the matches weren't great. And personally, I felt like it was time for it to move. And I just feel like, does it feel like there's been an injection of life into the event with it moving in Turin? Could you feel anything different, or was it actually quite a similar vibe?
I feel something different from the Italian fans. I certainly think the fans here have an identity. Mm. For sure, the things that they respond to are interesting. You know, the way they embrace Rublev this week and the journey that they went on within one very short match with Andre Rublev yesterday. You know, I like how raw the emotions are here. I think the tennis fandom at this tournament has developed its own identity. I think I still do feel how I did last year about wanting it to have a bit more of its own visual identity.
Okay.
Every now and then I did have moments of having to remind myself I'm not in the O2 Arena, because I spent almost all my time inside. I was so rarely outside. Once I entered through the doors, it was sort of, you're in now. And it's just so visually similar, not just the court. It's what you see on the TV is how it is. It is a slightly smaller version of the O2 without the slightly weird soulless shopping centre surrounding it with an incredibly depressing harvester. The one where a person we all know that shan't be named went on a terrible date. That is something I've said on the podcast before, isn't it?
I can't remember. I know I've heard the story before. Whether the other thousands that are listening right now have, I can't tell you.
Anyway,
it happens. We're all friends here.
It's incredibly similar. And I get it, because it is visually fantastic. It's hard to see how you could make it look better, but equally I would like it to develop a bit of identity. And I don't know if that'll happen. Don't know. Be interesting to see. Mm. But look, it works. It sells out pretty much every session. You know, that was in a year with no Italians in either the singles or the doubles. I would have loved to see an Italian player play and the crowd responds to them. Hopefully, I'd be surprised if that didn't happen next year.
I got to be honest, Matt, I don't have anything else to say about Novak Djokovic other than he looks in just sublime form. He goes into 2023 knowing he can play the Australian Open now. And I'm absolutely thrilled at the prospect of watching it all unfold. I mean, I have nothing else to say. Do you have anything else to say?
Not really. I think he's become the oldest champion of this event by about 5 years. Mm. Like, it really is.
Really?
It really is an outlier. I think Arthur Ashe reached a final at a very similar age. But in terms of winners, Djokovic is about 5 years older than Federer was when Federer won his last one. And actually now, if you sort of look at his six titles here, it kind of tells you the story of Djokovic's career in a way, because he won one way back in Shanghai in 2008, which I must say I do often forget that he won that, but that was a real breakthrough. And, you know, obviously Djokovic had a big breakthrough. Then he had that period of just utter dominance in London where he won four in a row. And now he's won one at 35 to sort of underline his longevity, which has become such a sort of key factor of his career as well. So you can sort of chart his career, I think, through his results at this event. And yeah, of course, it just I think even if he hadn't won this, he was already well set up for 2023. But it sort of confirms that, yeah, he's still the guy going into next year.
It is consistently remarkable to me how little we talk about Djokovic's age.
Mm.
Because he is the youngest of the three.
When you consider how it feels like Nadal is just sort of being held together somehow at the moment, and Murray's obviously got a metal joint in, and Federer's really can't move properly like it. I mean, how, and Djokovic just doesn't look any different at all.
No, it is extraordinary. Yeah. The oldest ever champion of this event, but I think there's a few things going on. Firstly, that his age just so rarely occurs to you, because exactly as you say, David, he looks the same. You know, to fill the gaps in the schedule that are, I'll say again, too short for napping. we've been running, classic matches, and a lot of those have involved Novak Djokovic, and he looks the same. And I think the other thing is the goalposts have been moved age-wise over the last 5 to 10 years by Federer and Nadal and Djokovic as well. But because he's that bit younger, he's sort of, again, as has defined his career, he's following, he's chasing, he's hunting. But he is 35. 10 years ago, that would be all that we would talk about. Oh my God, he's doing this and he's 35.
Yeah, when Andre Agassi did it, he was such an outlier.
But we barely mention it.
And Andre Agassi wasn't doing this at 35. Like, it's crazy. It really is. And as you said, age is affecting him the least, I think, out of all those players. Nadal, as you said, looks his age. He's defying it still, but he looks his age now. And Federer didn't win this much when he was this age. Okay, maybe just about the start of 2017, he was about this sort of age. But it does seem like Djokovic has still got so much time. And actually, I think, obviously, one of the big talking points of this year is how little Djokovic has played. And obviously, that has been entirely self-inflicted. But what it has given him is time on the practice court, which you don't normally get. And that might have, in a way, have helped him. You know, if we think of a canister, as Federer gave us that expression, not playing so much this year, okay, it's affected him because he didn't play the two hard court slams, which he could have won. But in the long run, it might have helped him develop his game in his 30s, which you don't normally get to do, and just not sort of worn him out so much. And yeah, he just looks fresh, doesn't he? Which isn't a word that you would normally associate with a 35-year-old, I think.
Just to round off the Djokovic chat, I also think, and this is a point that we've made before, a few weeks ago perhaps, but I do think it's one unintended good consequence of Djokovic's year that he has injected so much life and commitment into the tour, which we haven't seen recently. I don't think it's an accident that I do think it's a factor in this being his first win at this tournament in 7 years that I don't want to say he's not been motivated for the past 7 years. Of course he has. But I think he's more motivated than he's been in 7 years.
Yeah.
This year.
Unquestionably.
Without question.
Mm.
Yeah.
And that's been great to see. Seeing him go to Astana and Tel Aviv with motivation. That's been good for the tour. Novak Djokovic being invested in the tour, okay, for selfish reasons. You know, I still lament the fact that there are seemingly no Martinez and Chris Evert that really see the requirement and obligation and duty of of promoting the tour, of using their status to promote the tour. And okay, the ATP is in a completely different situation to what the WTA was, you know, in the 70s and 80s. But anyway, different discussion. But whatever the motivation, it's been great.
It just sets up next year. He becomes the most interesting player in men's tennis, because can these young, exciting players who seem to have something about them that might hurt him, can they get to him? And it's just, with what's on the line for him historically, and with Nadal still around, come on, this is going to be amazing.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life, and of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right. Right, let's talk about the doubles, which was won by Joe Salisbury and Rajiv Ram, beating Nikola Mektic and Mate Pavic in close sets. It was a close match, but Salisbury and Ram were always the better team, is how it came across on the day. And in fact, Salisbury and Ram, all the way through this tournament, Catherine, they just seem to have been on this mission. I mean, I know any team that enters is on a mission to try to win it, but it felt like these two, it was personal. You know, they hadn't won it before. A British player hasn't won it before. They've had in their words, some downs this year, an up and down year. It hasn't all been roses for them, but they just seemed on it, and they just seemed kind of Djokovic-like in terms of their freshness and determination that this was not going to be denied them.
Yeah, you've said it. The look in their eye reminded me of Novak Djokovic, that resilience and stubbornness, I suppose. You know, in the semi-finals yesterday against the world number ones, Kulhoff and Skubski, you know, Rajiv Ram drilling body shots of Wesley Kulhoff. A ruthlessness I've not seen from Rajiv Ram before. And I do think there was needle there. You know, I do think there was a little bit of Ram and Salisbury wanting to say, okay, you're world number ones, are you? But you haven't won a slam this year. You're not going to win the ATP finals. I do think there's been that bit of swagger about Ram and Salisbury this week. And they were not to be denied. Mektic and Pavic were also unbeaten coming into this final. They're quite a similar team in terms of chemistry and understanding, you know, just feeling really well bedded in. The scoreline looked close, as most of the double scorelines have this week. There have been very few matches that haven't looked close on paper, and most in reality have been close. They've been very serve dominated, but this one didn't feel that close. Mektic was really irritable right from the word go, shouting over at his team, getting quite stressed, and I think that was sort of Ram and Salisbury induced stress. I think they felt second best pretty early doors. And then there was a very controversial double hit moment with Nikola Mektić, where there was a video review, which seemed like far too sensible and logical a thing for tennis to be doing.
Yeah, there needs to be more of that in tennis, no question about it. But anyway, well done to Salisbury and Ram, who won the title. And I mean, they just looked so thrilled, which is exactly what you want.
I read that they had improved every year they've played at the ATP finals. I think round robin, semis, final, winning it. I couldn't believe they'd actually been together 4 years, enough to play it four times. They still, to me, feel quite like a sort of fresh, new pair, but I think that's just because it works. I've never felt like it was growing tired as a pair. They seem to just suit each other so well. And yeah, that's just a cool record, isn't it? Just to improve year on year and finally get the win. Good for them.
And they both had parents watching from the sidelines, and you know how I feel about people winning and losing, to be honest, while their parents are watching. And I know Joe Salisbury's mum is a Tennis Podcast listener, so hello.
Hey!
Hey.
Hi. Brilliant. Oh, well, that's lovely. And yeah, so anyway, we are now going to go our separate ways for the night, and Catherine's going to go and pack and get ready to come back to London. Matt's got a very exciting day ahead in Malaga, and we get to speak to you tomorrow night, Matt, and find out what it was all like on site in Malaga ahead of the Davis Cup finals. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, looking forward to it. I will report back.
Oh, I can't wait. Well, listen, we haven't got a pet mascot today.
What?
Because Matt's been on a flight, and I don't know where the document is that has all the pet mascot details in it.
I've been brought here under false pretenses.
You got the glass of wine, didn't you? What more do you want? But no, very good point. But we did get Tamara Glennie and granddaughters Polly and Ella. So thank you to them. If you'd like to introduce a show of the Tennis Podcast, you can become a friend, or you can get a shout out. We're going to have a few of those in a minute. We've got our own personal mascots. I've got Darwin, Catherine's got Carter, Matt's got the dearly departed Gerald. We have Billie Jean the dog, sponsored by Billie Jean King and Alana Kloss. We have Chris Albert Lee and Carl Weingartner as our executive producers. And Matt, our shout-outs for the final edition of the ATP Finals in 2022 are?
We're starting with James and Sophie, who are currently living in London, but from Sydney and Canberra, respectively, in Australia.
Oh, all right, James and Sophie. Jim Courier, Jimmy Connors. I can't think of a James.
Really tenuous.
James Scott Connors. There you go.
Yeah.
Catherine's not having it.
I don't know if James will be pleased with that. James?
James Scott Connors.
James Kiothavong.
There you go. What about Sophie? Have we got a Sophie tennis player?
Sophie Amiak.
Yeah, there you go. Commentator, former player. Can't think of anybody else.
Come on, there are other Sophies.
We'll have a think about it.
Everyone's called Sophie.
Okay, right. Okay.
Well, I mean,
well, thank you
both. I mean, it's a multinational name, isn't it?
Yes.
I feel like we've let you down, James and Sophie. But that is on us and not on you. You're definitely great. We have been disappointing.
Correct.
We've got Arvind in Philadelphia.
Like Arvind Palmer.
Hey, Arvind. How you doing?
Hey.
From Philadelphia, home of the Eagles, who got a narrow win tonight.
Arvind is a computer science teacher.
Wow. Nice one, Arvind. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Arvind.
We've also got Justin Ledzinski in Poughkeepsie.
Oh, isn't it Poughkeepsie?
What did I say?
Poughkeepsie.
It is definitely Poughkeepsie.
I know it from the episode of Friends.
Yeah,
where
me
Ross
too.
Dates a girl in Poughkeepsie and falls asleep on the train and ends up in Montreal.
Yeah.
Blimey, that's a very specific reference from Friends. Mm. That's impressive. Mm.
Everyone. It's called the one with the girl from Poughkeepsie, I think.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
Justin, thank you so much for being a friend of
the pod.
Thank
you, Justin. I've just realised Justin probably gets that all the time when he tells people he's from Poughkeepsie.
And he loves
it. I'm sorry, Justin, for being such a cliche.
We've got Vic, who is in Newton Le Willows in the UK.
Oh, hello.
Right, Vic. The only Vic I can remember in relation to tennis is Vic Braden. Do you remember the name Vic Braden coming up?
Nope.
In tennis circles?
Nope.
I can't quite remember where I got that from, but I know it exists. Thank you.
There's
Vic.
Another
okay.
Vic.
Okay, I was going to go Victor Troitsky and hope that Vic was satisfied with that.
Vic Braden, Victor Kenneth Braden Jr., was an American tennis player, instructor, and television broadcaster for the sport. There you go.
Mm. Well, thanks, Vic.
Vixatious is the one I was thinking of.
Vic coached Tracy Austin. That's how I knew from our friend's special, the Tracy Austin story. She mentioned him on the show. Lovely. Got there in the end. Thanks, Vic.
Vic says that he once got beaten by a young Neil Skupski in a Liverpool League mixed cup final, which he says is, you know, now a good anecdote.
No shame in that, Vic. World number
Not
one, Neil Skupski.
Brilliant.
And last one today is Lyle Moran in San Diego.
Oh, home of Taylor Fritz.
Yeah. San Diego.
I've been to San Diego.
Somewhere I'd like to visit. Oh, yeah?
Mm.
Nice.
Very nice. That was a holiday I went on where I learnt a lot about US broadcasting. It was during the 2016 Rio Olympics. And I was going from establishment to establishment, making increasingly aggressive inquiries about why they weren't showing the opening ceremony. And it turns out the West Coast show things like on a delay or something. Nobody on the West Coast of America is getting anything live, seemed to be my takeaway from it. Very unsatisfactory, anyway.
The only bad side of San Diego, though, Lyle. So, you know, other than that, we're all for it.
Mm. Yeah, I surfed. I lay on the beach. Lovely.
Marvellous. Lyle, thank you so much for being a friend of the Tennis Podcast. Thank you to all of you, and thank you to everybody for listening to the show over the past few days. I hope you've enjoyed it. Catherine, travel back home safely. Hopefully speak to you tomorrow night, or certainly lots of the shows this week from the Davis Cup Finals. Matt's going to tell us all about it because he's in Malaga. He's going to go and speak to the players tomorrow. And we've got, what is it? 7 days worth of shows coming your way? Fantastic. Can't wait.
I'm pumped.
Right, let's do it. Okay, folks, good night, and we'll speak to you tomorrow.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.